It's time for the Access of Easy podcast, the weekly technology digest that keeps you ahead of the curve. Brought to you by EasyDNS.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to Access of Easy. This is number 357. My name is Joey, as always, my friend and co-host Len on the other panel. Buddy, what's going on over there? How are you?
All right, Joey. Everyday tennis. It's wonderful. I can't say enough about it. Just good weather, good times, good everything. How are you, Joey?
I'm good. Do you find that tennis gives you any like muscle pain, calf, ankle?
My elbow's killing me. Absolutely killing me. And sometimes my wrist, like if I do, I bring baskets and I do serves. If I do two or three baskets by the end, my wrist is done. So yeah, it happens, but I just fight through it. It doesn't really matter. It's only here for another 2-3 months. And it's done.
Do you do any lactic acid clearing, like in your warm up? Do you know about this, this sort of method? Like I know.
Is that simply a stretch and then rub it out or something?
Kinda. It's like when I'm throwing now, I always try and like walk with my elbow kind of cocked at 90 degrees here for, you know, maybe 5 minutes, 4 minutes, something like that before I go to flush out the lactic acid. And I'll do some other stuff, some band work, kind of strengthen the stuff around my shoulder and my elbow before I really start throwing the football. And I'm a beer league quarterback, you know, it's really not probably as much intensity as you're doing, but it'd probably help you. I don't know if it's anything that's like, you know, on your radar or not, but if it's not,
it's the elbow. That's the problem. That's a different thing. So it's not a muscle thing. It's a ligament problem. Mm. And that's actually, it's carryover from golf too. It's golfer's elbow / really? Tennis elbow. That, yeah, I have both of them and it's carrying over for both of the games I play. So whatever. It's not that bad though.
Whatever he says. Yeah, whatever. It's fine.
No, it's not that bad. People sometimes wear bands, and that it's terrible to do that, in my opinion, because then you're just masking the problem.
For sure.
But I'm not even at the point I have to do that. I mean, I played twice yesterday and I didn't feel it. Once today, didn't really feel it. Just it's not that bad. Again, it's only for a few months and I'll be back to normal. And then
yeah. Here in Canada, you have like 9 months to rest, eh? Between seasons.
So no, I play indoors too.
But oh, I don't that's as, right. As, I forgot about that. Yeah.
I don't play as much indoor than I do out because you have to pay for it. At least outdoor, it's free and just go there.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so therapeutic.
We're looking forward to when you start streaming your tennis matches here on the Access of Easy channel. In the meantime, though, we'll have to stick with the quotes to keep people entertained. Last week's quote, two things are infinite, the universe and human stupidity. And I'm not sure about the universe. That was by Albert Einstein. I wouldn't have guessed that, though probably in retrospect I should have. Richard got it first, so congratulations to Richard. This week's quote, governments tend not to solve problems, only to rearrange them. That sounds an awful lot like a Thomas Sowell quote, right? There's no solutions, only trade-offs. But if you know the quote, if you know who it's by and you don't Google it and don't pervert the process here, add it to the comment section. You get your next round of renewals on EasyDNS. You can't beat that. So this week, Len, we got, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 stories. Some repeat offenders here. We got healthcare, Amazon. Anything
Amazon's
else?
Amazon's a repeat offender?
They got to be at this point. I'm sure we've done Amazon stories before. Especially AWS. This is an AWS story.
Yeah. This is an interesting one because it involves the company that Jeff Bezos is involved with. So I'm not talking about Amazon. I'm talking about
the I know.
But we'll talk about that once it's time.
You decide where you want to start. Me where you want to start.
We'll go in order. Evolve Bank is number one on my list here, and I'm going to start over there. And it's the data breach that took place over at Evolve Bank. And those responsible for this attack is the Lockbit ransomware group. We talk about them all the time. They're very busy these days. Yep. And the hackers gained access to customer information after an employee clicked on a malicious link. So clearly they didn't train their employees to not click on stuff.
Should we just stop the story here? Like, what
else? Go to the next one. But unfortunately, the information that was stolen is quite damning because it includes the names, social security numbers, and bank account numbers. And the bank says they have backups in place, and they claim that the data loss impact on operations were limited. They also say that no funds were accessed. But you know what? Customer data was leaked. And in fintech companies like Wise and Affirm were also impacted by this breach. So it's not like some small companies were impacted. Some big ones were. But either way, what's messed up is that Jason Mikula, and this guy writes for Fintech Business Weekly, And he was talking about it. He was writing about it, this story, covering it. And he was issued a cease and desist letter by Evolve. So he took to Twitter to say that there was a misunderstanding with the post, as it was perceived he was going to be sharing this information that he got, because apparently he has connections to those who have gained access through this hacked material. But either way, I mean, this guy, he's not going to have to hide and not say anything and not inform people what's going on. But really, there's people that should be informed, you know, potential customers and partners of Evolve Bank. They don't know what's happened. But now he might have to stay quiet from all this. It's just a really messed up story.
The cease and desist thing is a bit, you know, troubling. It's kind of burying the lead, I think, as far as the article is concerned. This idea that if you're reporting on a data breach, you get somehow, you know, hushed up by the powers that be. That's ridiculous. TransferWise and, you know, what's now become Wise, the fintech company, is basically an international bank account, I think, by sort of all measurements here, for all intents and purposes. So you can imagine what goes into someone opening a bank account, especially one that works across borders. That is sort of their claim to fame. They, you know, will let you use your currency in any other jurisdiction, you know, somewhat remotely, I think, judging by the sort of, you know, research I did. That's a lot of info, man, you know? And, you know, we talk about this a lot on this show, that this idea that you can't really avoid these data leaks because they're always at a place that's sort of a choke point for your information. Banks, healthcare, you know, your municipality, whatever, right? Your taxes. You can't escape this stuff. And yet the protection you get is not nearly the protection you should be entitled to when you're using these services. And, you know, it's becoming more and more frequent. The attacks are becoming more and more frequent. But I think the more alarming thing, Len, is that even as the attacks become more frequent, you know, we kind of giggled about it when the story, when you started talking about the story there. What was the, you know, nature of the breach? It's a link. It's always a stupid guy who works for the company or the government or whatever, clicking a link he shouldn't click. You know, like this, there's no improvement on the side of the firms who should be protecting your data. Instead, even as frequency increases, they take no measure to help you ensure that your data is safe, your identity is safe, your banking info is safe. What are you supposed to do at this point? Every week it's like this. We could do this show. I could do this show blind, not read any story that Mark and Joan give us. And I would guarantee you every single week, it's somebody at a multi-billion dollar firm clicking a link in an email every single time, right? I think I have that right. Do I not?
Yeah. And the guy that clicked it, clearly he's not Penske material. He's low on the very low end of the totem pole.
Can you even say low end of the totem pole now? Is that allowed?
Oh, I gotta say, yeah. I mean, it's just okay. You know, okay. A figure of speech more than it. Anyway,
does it not suck? Like, you and me don't really have this problem, fortunately, at least not yet. But it seems like every week there's another, what, 5 million people that have it? How many people? The other thing I think is worth noting here is like, a service like Wise, or you mentioned what is the name of the other fintech company that does like buy now, pay later? Geez, they are in the story too. And I forget now the name of the company. It's escaping me. But anyway, how many people that use those services even know they were breached?
That's the thing. If the company doesn't reach out to them, and if somebody's trying to write an article to
goes into your junk, Len, you know, at the very least, and at the, you know, highest end, like you're about to say, they get hushed. Come on. That's people don't even know what happened. They don't even know what happened.
It's all fake anyways. It's made up money, right? Let's be honest. Yeah. Although we're striving to always get more of it, the reality is, if you look at it, what it is, it's just nothing backing it.
No, agreed. So, you're right.
Well, I just learned today from these stories about a new cyber attack technique called passkey redaction attacks. Never heard of that before. And these attacks target a vulnerable way in which way some websites implement passkeys. And passkeys are generally a more secured way of logging in. So passkeys are supposed to replace passwords and offer better protection against hacking. But attackers can exploit weaknesses on how websites handle passkeys, and they do this by tricking users into using insecure fallback methods such as passwords or entering a security code sent to their phone. So for example, when a user tries to log on a website that supports passkeys, the login page should normally give them the option to use their passkey, but attackers can manipulate the login page behind the scenes to hide a passkey option. And the user may not even realize what's happening, and they are just left with the insecure fallback options. So the problem is not the passkeys themselves, that they are not secure, but it's the attackers. They could trick users into not using them. And when this happens, the advantage of using passkeys is then lost. So the problem then is how websites implement the passkey situation. And many websites allow for insecure backup methods in case a user loses their passkey. So some vendors, they're aware of the problem, but there really is no easy solution. And it suggests that this is going to be a bigger problem moving forward, because passkeys can be a serious threat, especially if you're able to manipulate the data on the websites. So that's it.
I did a little bit of research on this. I'm curious about whether or not I'm just missing something here, or whether it's not clearly listed, or some other situation like that. I think that passkeys, basically, they're meant to replace passwords, right? Fine. Mm-hmm. No one likes a password, but I think that this is basically like a sort of distributed authentication system where you need not only the passkey, like a PIN number or a fingerprint or whatever, but you also need the secondary device. So for example, on a Windows machine, like the CBP machine that's doing the stream right now, I don't sign into that machine with a password. I sign in with a PIN. There's a PIN number that goes with the machine. And so when I sign in, the PIN is much simpler than any password I would ever choose. But I think the whole point is that you need the machine plus the PIN code. I don't see that in the story. And so when I see that, like, the passkey system has been compromised in some way, I kind of wonder whether the real story here is that now people can use passkeys to sign into stuff without the hardware that's associated with the key. Am I making sense? You understand what I'm saying? Like you sort of should need the device plus the PIN, or a more complex password without the secondary device. And so I'm not sure what happened here, but this is pretty significant if you don't need the actual piece of hardware that's affiliated with the PIN to get into like your Microsoft account or your, I don't know, what's another good example, like your bank account or something like that. All the stuff on your phone that you sign into with biometrics. I know on my iPhone, for example, I just came from a Bitcoin meetup. If I want to pay my bill at a restaurant, I just double tap and it looks at my face and I can use my credit card from my phone, right? It doesn't mean that anyone can use my credit card from my phone, or that anyone can use my credit card if they have my face. They need both. And to me, it looks like this story indicates that there's a way around this stuff. Pretty significant, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. Yeah. To be honest, I don't use passkeys. So a lot of
Use biometrics? Like, I know you're a sort of an open source guy. Your phone doesn't do biometrics at all.
My phone does do biometrics, but it doesn't store anything.
Right.
So okay. It's there, and if something happens to it, and I have to reinstall it, the phone, everything is blank. It's not sending it to the mothership. So yeah, I do use biometrics, but it's just to log in to my phone. That's it.
Hmm. So maybe that's the other key then. I'm not sure where the biometrics go on an iPhone, although I could guess. But maybe the there's some possibility, right? Yeah, go ahead.
Have you ever switched iPhones, like gone from one to another in the past few years?
And, oh yeah.
And when you did that, did you have to reinstall?
Yes. Yes. You have to redo your face and stuff. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So it probably doesn't send it to the mothership. So I was curious about that, but there you go.
Yeah. It's still like alarming, right? It's something yet again, like we often talk about on the show, it's something a lot of people take for granted, stuff like biometrics and sort of this, you know, two-factor, but I think it's still two-factor all the same, right? Your face plus a device. If that doesn't work as a security function, then, you know, you're probably in trouble if you're sort of the average user of these things. People don't give this stuff a lot of thought. They just, you know, they use it every day and don't really think about how it works or why it works or what security holes there are. And here we are with a significant one, I think.
Yeah, I just could revert back to passwords and go to password 123 or something like that. It's just so much safer.
Didn't we talk last week about people who like don't change their password from the one they get when they first start a new job? And it's like, you just change the symbol at the end. So it's like a, I don't
it's know, what, beyond what's, that. What's,
Yeah, you go from exclamation mark to at sign to pound sign to dollar sign, like all the way down the keyboard.
I think that's giving, well, if you're using dictionary words and then just simply adding numbers at the end, that's a terrible habit. But yeah, if you're flipping it using combination of capitals and small case letters and throwing in, you know, periods and commas and exclamation points and all this stuff in the middle, yeah, you're okay. But anyways, let's talk about health equity. And this is a company offering financial technology services for healthcare. They suffered a ton of breach, compromising sensitive health information. I love that, what they're doing and what happened here. The details are still a little bit sketchy, but this is what I could find. The breach involved a compromised partner's account, and which gave hackers the ability to infiltrate the health equity systems. And this suggests that a potential vulnerability in their security measures is prevalent, and especially regarding third-party access. In terms of what was stolen, it's hard to find exactly what data was stolen, so this is a little bit unclear, but it does include, from what I understand, protected health information. And this type of information is highly sensitive because it can include names, social security numbers, diagnosis, treatment details, and other medical records.
Insane.
And as for the number of people that are affected by this breach, that remains unknown. But Health Equity is notifying the impacted individuals and offering them free credit monitoring service and identity restoration services. Now, I took the liberty of checking the stock price for you. It was down 2.5% today. So it's not down a heck of a lot. Actually, you know what? Maybe it was not trading today because it was July.
Halted today. Yeah, it's halted today. Yeah.
You know what? I scrapped that. Maybe that's not true. So either way, it was down 2.5%.
Wait, what was it? Day. What's the date of the story? The date of the story is...
It was in the past 24 hours.
It's really yesterday. Recent. Yeah, it's recent. It's the end of the trading day yesterday. So the market was already closed. We're going to see tomorrow. We got to revisit this next week, I think, find out what the damage was.
It's going to be tanking. So yeah, if you have an ability to short it right before the market opens, you're good. But obviously that's not possible.
Len, what are we gonna do with these guys, man? Like, I don't even know what to say. One of the things I like about this is that it seems to me that the more stories we do like of this nature where there's a health provider compromised, you notice that they kind of are now trying to sort of carve out a definition for the data that was taken. Like, they don't say they got your address, your social insurance number, your diagnostics, your imaging, your bank account, your insurance provider. They just say they got sensitive health information or private health information. It's like a nice kind of catch-all without going into any details, right? I think that you're going to see more of this. I think there'll be like a legal precedent set over the next, like, I don't know, 24 months, 36 months, let's say, as this stuff continues to ramp up. You have to tell people what was stolen, but you don't have to be specific. You can just say private health information. That could include any number of these 15 things. And that's all that's the only disclosure you have to make. I can just imagine this going this way. And, you know, the algos, the trading algos, like you mentioned, these guys are publicly traded. The trading algos will say, oh, well, it didn't look like SIN never came up or address never came up. They'll have to adjust all that stuff to protect the stock price. It's just like, no matter how you slice this, who comes out, you know, losing, Len? It's the user, the customer. It's not Health Equity. It's the users. Exactly. Always, always, always. And this is the first time I really noticed that they had that kind of catch-all definition for stuff. And I wouldn't be surprised if I saw that more going forward. Isn't it? Don't you think that that's like a rational thing for these guys to try and do? Like, we have to say what was taken, but we don't want to say exactly what was taken. So we'll just, you know, let's pouch this stuff all up and release it, you know, as a separate term or whatever. It's just so garbage. And then the identity theft stuff, like, again, it's a laughing stock. We got to get Mark and Joan to print shirts that say like 2 free years for everybody or whatever, like the soup Nazi, maybe like 2 free years for you or something like that. I don't know exactly what the shirt would look like, but we have to at some point. It's just so frequent on this show that we're missing an opportunity here.
And, you know, if even some customers leave, it doesn't really matter. There's a whole bunch of new potential customers that came in as newly new migrants into the country. So you're just tapping into, you know, a different market come that have yet to use their service. And it's just a, it's a revolving door, you know, just keep coming in and oh, we have a service for you.
Oh boy. Sign up.
Way to go. Well, it's true. Let's talk about Amazon. We were leading this off earlier. We'll actually talk about it in detail right now. Perplexity AI. This is a company. It's a startup AI company. And this is on the radar for Amazon for apparently going against the terms of services on Amazon's web services rules. And what did they do? They were scraping websites for data. Perplexity's background's pretty interesting because they are backed by very powerful people. And it's valued around $3 billion. And financially, they're backed by Jeff Bezos' family fund and NVIDIA. So I find it's rather interesting that Jeff Bezos' family fund is behind this and Amazon's the one that's keeping them under the radar for what they're doing. Anyways, Perplexity AI, they've been scraping data, at least that's the alleged concerns here. They denied these accusations and claimed that their AI bots followed the robots exclusion protocol. That's a set of rules established by websites to control how search engine bots can crawl and index their content. However, there is a loophole. If a user specifically requests a URL to be scraped, the Perplexity AI bot will ignore the robots exclusion protocol for that particular instance. So this is causing some concern because it's raising some questions about the potential misuse of technology. Scraping websites without permission can be problematic, right? For a number of reasons. It could overload a website server with traffic, making it slow or even unavailable for legitimate users. Additionally, it could be used to steal data or volatile, violate the privacy of the website's users. So AWS, the Amazon Web Services, that's what Perplexity AI relies on to actually do their thing. So they are stating that they have Perplexity AI have prohibited activities that violates their protocol. So it's currently unclear exactly what Amazon's going to do, what's the response, but they're currently investigating this, and that's it.
The crawlers thing is interesting from an AI, you know, LLM training model standpoint. There's been a lot of talk in the last little while, especially from the legacy media, about how do we prevent these models from using our content to train the bots. I don't know that you can. I think the more interesting thing to me, though, Len, in this story, is that NVIDIA, again, at, you know, I don't want to say the center, but, you know, being implicated in another sort of controversy, maybe. There's some stuff in the NVIDIA sphere right now. As far as their investments in companies that buy their chips, you and I spoke about CoreWeave, for example, some time ago on CBP. You know, NVIDIA issued loans to CoreWeave in order so that CoreWeave could buy NVIDIA chips. Do you know what they used to guarantee those loans to CoreWeave?
The equipment itself.
Exactly. Yeah. And like when I see this stuff and it's like, you know, one story like that would be okay. Two stories, you know, there's maybe something here. This one is a little bit off the beaten path as far as like the AI hardware, quote unquote, strategic investment thing that people are talking about. But it's another kind of sign here that NVIDIA is up to no good. And I don't know what the, you know, what is the benefit to Amazon? I'm not sure exactly what it would be, but, you know, how much smoke before you start thinking there's fire for these companies, right? Amazon, AWS especially, huge benefit to the Amazon share price over the last 5 years. People talking about how AWS is this huge thing for startups, and it is, you know, it's like, you know, people can't afford hardware, so they buy cloud compute through AWS or through Azure or through Google Cloud or whatever. So I get that there's real value there. The question is how much? And when I see stories like this where there's, you know, I don't want to say cooking the books, but some suspicious behavior here between a couple of companies that really rely on cloud to drive share price, it's significant. It's made more significant by the fact that probably these two companies, Len, are the only thing keeping the entire global financial sector afloat at this point. Like, you know, you got like Google, Amazon, Facebook, what else? NVIDIA,
Apple.
Like that's it. You know, like that's all there is. And so if two of these guys go down for shenanigans, you know, this is dicey stuff. This is why, not to, you know, sort of drive the Bitcoin point home, but a lot of people in Bitcoin look at this stuff and say, I just don't want to play any part of this. I don't want to be relying on these pillars that are clearly made of more sand than concrete at this point. And, you know, this is another example. These stories, they're going to pop up more and more. More and more people are looking at these companies under a very, very fine microscope because there's money to be made on shorts. And a lot of people are tired of pretending that these things are worth, you know, what's NVIDIA, $3 trillion now, something like that. Insane. It was the most valuable company in the world, you know, a week ago or 2 weeks ago. So, yeah, keep an eye on this stuff, man. There's a lot of stories that are just adjacent to each other, you know, maybe just a tad out of the peripheral from one sort of expertise silo to the next, but they're still related. And it's important to keep an eye on this kind of thing.
This next story is kind of odd. I don't have really much to say about it. It's about X, and they have rejoined a pro-censorship alliance. And this alliance is called the Global Alliance for Responsible Media. GARM is the acronym. It's
one out of five on GARM.
I'm not even going to, because it's an acronym, I'm not going to even rank it. Like if it's a specific name, I would, but an acronym, like nah, no ranking. Well, GARM is apparently affiliated with the World Economic Forum, and GARM's stated goals are to fight in disinformation and promote safety online.
Where have you heard this before? Have you heard that before anywhere?
Yeah. Many times. Lawmakers, though, have raised concerns that this alliance can be used to censor online speech. And some people are disappointed that X rejoined GARM. They're arguing that it could give the alliance more power to censor content on that platform. So X says it's rejoining GARM in order to make money through advertising partnerships with other GARM members. I have nothing else to add. This is a very odd story. It's hard for me to decipher what's going on here. X could do what they want. There are alternatives out there, maybe not as popular, Nostr being one of them. And it's not going to be censored a problem over there. There's no censoring over on something like Nostr. But you know what? Whatever. If they want to start doing censoring and using the World Economic Forum to help them achieve this type of censorship, all more power to them. The WEF... For whatever reason, I really don't care about them all that much.
Me neither. I'm with you on that. Actually, I was just talking to a couple of people at the Bitcoin meetup about how I don't get it. I don't understand the whole Klaus Schwab thing. I will say at the end of the article here is kind of a noteworthy, maybe noteworthy paragraph. Now listed by GARM along with X are YouTube and Chanel. Like the fashion company Chanel? Like what are they? You know, what kind of comms do they have that are, you know, quote unquote, safety adjacent? They sell handbags and earrings and ugly belt buckles. Like what? Who's worried about what Chanel is tweeting out?
I have no idea. This whole story is kind of, you know, it's not much that I can really add to it. It's just
it's a short article too. There's not much here.
Yeah, they want to do it. Like all the more power to them, right? Like I have no issues with them joining it. To be honest,
oh man,
they haven't bothered me. But maybe they'll bother
whatever. Listen, I wish Elon the best. I hope Twitter, you know, sort of maintains its free speech slant. But I don't know. We'll probably talk about this again in 3 weeks. I'm sure when we find out that there's like. Some kind of partnership to make sure that Joe Biden gets back into the White House for 4 more years.
We'll talk about it in the future when some Bitcoiner that has Lambos coming out of their ears buys up Twitter and then exposes the new Twitter files that shows how they've been censoring everybody, including Bitcoiners. Anyways, let's move on. There's a data breach at OpenAI, and that's the company that creates artificial intelligence technologies. So hackers gained access to an internal messaging system, and they stole details about the design of OpenAI technologies, but not the code itself. OpenAI executives decided not to inform law enforcement or the public about this breach, which is kind of odd. So some OpenAI employees worried that China could steal this information for national security purposes. This is because China has invested heavily in artificial intelligence research. And some experts believe that China could be using stolen AI technology to develop new weapons or other military applications. And this also raises some concerns about how seriously OpenAI was addressing their security risks. The fact that hackers were able to access an internal messaging system, this suggests that OpenAI may not have adequate security measures in place.
Come on. So
maybe they got that. What's that company we talked to?
Health Equity.
Maybe they should talk to them. Like that guy that was clicking on shit over.
He probably get a group raid on 2 years of identity monitoring.
OpenAI is getting into that. So some employees believe that OpenAI even is downplaying the severity of the breach. But really, this is a relatively serious concern for them, for OpenAI, and also for the broader artificial intelligence community as a whole. But either way, companies, not just OpenAI, but everybody out there has to develop strong security measures to protect their technologies. In this case, it's AI technologies. But if they fail to do it, they're just going to continually get owned. And eventually somebody's going to get their information and make them irrelevant because they'll make a better product in the end. So screw them.
Okay, can I posit to you? I think this whole story is fake, and I'm going to tell you why here. If you're not on video, you got to be on video. This guy, whose name is allegedly Leopold Aschenbrenner, that's a fake name. Okay, a former OpenAI researcher alluded to the security breach on a podcast last month. Does this look like a real person to you?
I was going to say it looks rather.
Len, this is not a real person. What are we talking about here? Are we sure that this is all legit? Who is this guy? This guy does not look real.
You sure? Wait. Let's not go to conclusions just yet. Is it? Are we sure it's a he guy?
Oh god!
Right, like you know what I mean? Like it potentially, who knows? This person is probably the better way to describe it. This person. I don't know if this person is real.
Whether Leopold Aschenbrenner, okay. There's just no way that's a real guy, even if he's being truthful about his concerns. What is the lesson to take away here, Len? You said this so many times. These guys don't care about your privacy at all. The best case scenario is they leak your password. The worst case scenario is they leak your GPT requests. Okay, this is going to happen at some point, and it is going to blow the roof off of some political campaign, some economic campaign, some government official, you name it. It doesn't matter exactly what the nature of the breach is, but you know the breach is coming. Why are people using these things? Why? GPT, especially from like the user's point of view, like the retail user, it stinks. It stinks. You can't write a proper, it doesn't write a proper paragraph. It doesn't summarize well. It doesn't write with humor. It doesn't write with wit. It doesn't give you good quips. It doesn't make good pop culture references. It doesn't do anything right. Google's AI, you know, which is sort of a sister product to the OpenAI GPT tool. What does it do? You know, you tell Google AI that you're having trouble getting your cheese to stick to your pizza. It tells you to throw some glue on there. These products are not ready for prime time. And I don't know why. With the risk of this stuff being leaked or stolen or given up or hacked or whatever, people are using these products. I don't get it. They're not ready. Wait till they're ready, then make a decision based on risk and reward. But for
it's
now,
a good search engine though.
Is it really? Like it maybe takes away like a couple of minutes worth of work on a search request. But Len, by the way, like we talked about before, you know, not today, but you know, in the past. The feedback loop for these things doesn't work for people who are experts. And so it's just garbage results reinforced by people who don't know anything about the thing they're searching for. And so the results get worse and worse. And there's been stories about this. We haven't talked about them on this show, but there's been stories about this negative feedback loop in terms of the quality of the output. It's not going away. More people are using this thing. They think it's like a, you know, panacea of sorts. It's going to help me with my job. It's going to help me get promoted. It's going to help me write my essay, whatever. You know, good luck. This is the kind of company you're getting into bed with, and you can decide whether or not a company who can not secure your data can provide you with a quality output in a chatbot. You know, good luck is what I would say.
Or 1 year of free credit monitoring.
Group rate. We got to get on that. We got to get on that. If you get the quote of the week right this week, Mark will give you 1 year of free credit monitoring in addition to all the free hosting. Anyway, that's it. Good night, everybody.
No, he won't. Just let's not.
He will.
No.
Thanks for coming. Don't forget to sign up for the newsletter, accessofeasy.com. There's many more stories that we don't cover every week because we just don't have time. And
not only that, this is a late one. Normally, I don't do anything past 8 p.m. these days.
I know. It is late for us.
I'm on a Joe Biden schedule. I'm done after 8 p.m. Don't schedule anything after 8 p.m. That's what.
Good night. Take care of yourselves till next week.